Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hey, what's happening? This is Snake from Skid Row, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Donnie Hillier from Trauma, and you're listening to Mark Striegel on Talking Metal. Horns up, headbangers.
Molson Canadian presents Heavy Montreal, August 9th and 10th, outdoors at Parche-en-Repos, featuring Metallica, Slayer, The Offspring, performing Smash, and Lamb of God. Festival passes on sale now. Visit HeavyMontreal.com. Produced by Evenco.
Mark Striegel, John Astronomy, the Talking Metal Podcast, coming to you from the Silver Spacecraft. I'm Bud Friendly, and now your hosts, Mark and John.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. We are here on the patio in Maplewood. John, Emily, how's everyone doing?
I'm doing great. Emily is doing great, having some shrimp cocktail.
Yeah,
I love
thanks for this food,
Thank
Emily.
Thank you so much, Emily.
You're welcome.
We have a great mic stand here that we're using. It looks like a cross between... Yeah. Kevin Dubrow and Steven Tyler.
And it's actually yours.
And it's
Emily. From the days of the Minx.
Yes.
Emily and my wife used to sing in a band called the Minx. Maybe we should get into a little music by the Minx.
Yes,
right
let's
now.
Hear some yeah. Minx. Then we'll get in and we'll tell you about what's going
to
be on
iTunes
the show.
By the Minx?
Everything.
Okay. We'll play a little Minx and you guys can pick it up on iTunes. Tell us a little bit about the Minx, who was in it.
Emily is in the middle of cooking, but would love to have her tell us a little bit about the Minx.
Run down the lineup.
Well, I sang. KG was our lead guitarist. Nikki.
Seven.
Yes. AKA Nikki Alcazar. Did I pronounce that right, Nikki? Who actually introduced me to Mark and knew Mark and John way right. before I did, was on rhythm guitar. We had a number of bass players and drummers, but my favorite bass player was Kurt Stevens.
And I don't know who's playing on this. This is called Stars. We'll play that one. Is that cool?
That's great. Yeah.
It's called Stars. It's on iTunes. Follow Emily on Twitter. We'll link that through today's show notes. Emily Striegel on Twitter. And, yeah, we mentioned the guests, right?
No, we didn't.
Oh,
but
we
have a great show coming up. We have Dave the Snake Sabo from Skid Row, one of my favorite guitarists of all time. I love Skid Row from the early days till the current days. And we have another great guest. Mark, tell us about him.
Don Hillier from the band Trauma. And he was a good friend of Cliff Burton from Metallica. He played with Cliff. And we're going to talk to him about Cliff and about the band Trauma, which is after like close to three decades back together.
Very cool.
Slightly new lineup, but yeah, it should be great stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing new music by the great cult classic metal band Trauma, which once featured the one and only Cliff Burton.
And Mark, Trauma is from San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they're still based there, but they were from that area for sure.
Very cool.
Yes. Cool. And yeah, we'll get into the Minx. Again, this is called Stars. I'm not exactly sure who is playing on this. It's definitely Nikki Seven, KG, those two girls on guitar, and Emily, my wife, singing. So let's listen to a little bit of this. You can buy the track on iTunes, and then we'll come back and talk with Mark Striegel and John Astronomy.
Moonlight on my GTO when I turn the radio on. Starlight on the open road and I may not ever come home. Oh, I don't care just for the same, 'cause I'm not about to change my ways. I'm living it up to my dying day. Stars, guitars, muscle cars make me happy. Oh yeah, yeah. Last bells ringing through the night and it sends me over the line.
Just heard was the Minx, my wife's old band. They haven't been together for a number of years, but that song is called Stars. You can pick it up on iTunes. Let's get into maybe a little Skid Row, John.
That sounds excellent.
I mean, I want to play some more obscure Skid Row stuff or off the beaten path or not just the hits. However, I just love the hits. And
cool.
And Snake, who's on the show today, I mean, he was a big part of those hits. He wrote most of them. Wow. With Rachel. I mean, those two guys were the songwriting team, and all the big hits, 90% of all Skid Row's songs come from those two guys.
Cool. Very cool.
And this is, you can't go wrong with this. This is called Youth Gone Wild.
By Skid Row on Talking Metal. Kid, another burned out town. I never played by the rules.
little Skid Row on Talking Metal. Let's get into the interview with Snake. Let's do this. We'll play a little sound sample of new Skid Row material, which you guys can then head over to iTunes and buy, if it, of course, is after the release date in August. And then we'll get right into the interview.
Hey guys, on the line we have Dave the Snake Sabo. How are you, Dave?
Doing really well, bud. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. I was checking out Rise of the Damnation Army, United World Rebellion Chapter 2. It sounds great, man.
Thank you so much, man. We had a blast making it. It was as far as all the records that I've ever made with Skid Row, this was by far the most fun I've ever had making one.
Wow.
The whole process was just such a joy to be a part of, man. Everything just fell in line. We were all seemed very much in lockstep from the very beginning of the process, and I'm very thankful for that. It was just such a blast, and we're kind of all chomping at the bit right now because it's finally going to see the light of day in the first week of August, and it's been done for a few months now. So it's difficult to sit there and just sit on it, but. We had to do it that way because of the just logistically working with two different labels, one international, one in North America, just to make sure that they were on the same page as well and coordinated at the same time. And so the first week of August was the best time for us to be able to do that.
Cool. Now, a lot of the bands that you guys kind of came up with, they've kind of gone to a softer, more stale sound, if you will. But you guys, you still sound so, like, filled with rage and energy and, I guess, young. I mean, it has a young sound to me when I listen to the album.
Thanks, man.
And how do you stay in touch with that sound, that real sound that you had when you were younger?
Our, every time that we go in and start working on a record, before we even like put pen to paper or anything like that, Rachel and I just kind of just sit down and I mean, we talk every day. We've been inseparable for the better part of 28 years. I know him better than anybody I know in my entire life and vice versa. So we just sit down and we start talking and talking about the things in life that have been affecting us, you know, personally and you know, overall. And, you know, we started basically just saying, you know, why do we do this, man? Like, what's the reason? What propels us to do this? And the answer is that we still, the heart and the soul and the spirit of everything harkens back to when you're a 15, 16-year-old kid. And for us personally, music was the great escape for us. It was it was our release valve. It was the only thing we knew how to express ourselves through music. Maybe we weren't great verbal communicators. Maybe we were awkward socially or whatever. But that was the one common denominator for the two of us that allowed us the ability to put our thoughts and our emotions into a piece of work that turned out to be songwriting, and this way released whatever whatever was affecting us to a deep degree. And we started talking about that. And, it's weird because when you're a 15, 16-year-old kid, the problems that affect you deeply may seem menial at this stage of your life, but the force and the impact they have on you are just the same as the problems that you may face today later on in life.
Right.
They affect you in the same manner. And it's the way they impact you that breeds the songs, the creativity, in order to express that and express how you feel about those certain things, and to be able to don't get an emotional overload and carry this burden on your shoulders without being able to release it somehow. And so we realized that we were, the embodiment of what we are is those still those kids. And there's a purity that goes along with that. Songwriting should be, and it is for us, a very, very selfish act. And it has to be. And that's a good thing, because you're not writing for anybody else. You're not writing for a trend. You're not writing with the hopes of being on pop radio. That just was never our thing. We wrote songs because it was the only way, again, of releasing our angst and our emotional instabilities, if you will.
Right.
And so when we write, we're writing for ourselves first, and then you hope that it connects with people. And whether it does or doesn't, at least it's never disingenuous. It's always pure at heart. And with this record, Rachel Lau, basically got back to just stripping away life. The stuff that convolutes that raw emotion. And you get rid of that. And you shut off the cell phone. And you lock the doors. And you pop open a bunch of beers and grab a couple guitars. And just start jamming. Having these discussions. And all of a sudden, this window opens. This creative window opens. And this time around, it was pretty incredible, because we just seemed, from the moment that light switch went on, it just seemed that we were in lockstep. And that process lasted all the way through the writing and the pre-production and the recording and the mixing, everything. There was a couple disagreements here and there. And it was just simply because we wanted the same things. We just saw it differently. Nothing that was horrible or mean-spirited or anything like that, antagonistic. It was just a couple things here and there. But for the most part, we were right in line, man. Everybody.
Cool.
And everybody really came to the table and brought their A game. And so the whole process was just such a pleasure. I look back on it so fondly, and I hope that we can continue that with the next EP. I think we found something within ourselves that's going to carry us through for quite some time.
Well, a couple questions. You mentioned the next EP. So how many chapters can we actually expect?
Three. The next one will be the last one.
Okay, cool. And why did you choose to do EPs over like a full length?
So many reasons why. We're in an age of absolute information overload, and processing through all the white noise is difficult for everybody. And we just didn't want to overindulge ourselves and browbeat anybody with like a 15-track CD or anything like that. We just don't have those. At least people I know just don't have the luxuries of being able to sit down and just listen to a whole record. It's kind of sad, man, in reality, that we just don't have that time anymore. Life comes at you with some rapid fire speed from all angles. And we are constantly being pulled. Life pulls us in every direction imaginable. So we just wanted to create something that was a lot less pressure on us, a lot more fun to do. You go in a studio for a couple weeks, you're done. You go back out on the road and you get to play it. And you hopefully people give it a shot and it leaves them wanting more. And, I think that at least for us, the days of making a 14 song CD and touring on that for 2 years, those days are over. I believe that we're in more of a fast food mentality in this day and age. So, you know, you kind of hit them quick and you go out, you tour for 6, 7, 8 months at a time and go back in, record more music, do it again. And I think that if you have a constant flow of music coming out, it's always fresh. You're very much in the moment when you're recording and writing it. And it doesn't lose its fervor. You kind of don't get browbeaten by being in a studio for months at a time, or the audience doesn't get browbeaten by, you know, 15 songs. We just don't have that luxury anymore in life.
Right.
I hate to say that because for me personally, I'm fortunate enough that I can just sit there and lie in my bunk at 2 o'clock in the morning while I'm on the road and listen to my favorite albums and whatnot, ad nauseum. But, you know, general public is not afforded that opportunity. A lot of times music becomes, it's background music, whereas for us, it's the fabric of our lives, man. It's as important, if not more important, than it ever was.
Right, right. A couple great covers on this EP as bonus tracks, I guess.
You.
And Rats in the Cellar just kind of brought me back to
us too.
To the old days. When I first saw you guys live, I think it was on the Aerosmith tour back in January of 1990 at the Spectrum in Philadelphia.
You're absolutely right. Good memory.
Yeah. And how about memories from you about that tour with Aerosmith? Any stories you could share?
I mean, those guys were just, to have that opportunity to go out with a band like that, they treated us with such great respect, and they were so kind. And Steven Tyler was just, he like took me under his wing. I became like his little brother. And after every show, pretty much every night, I'd go in and hang out with him, and he'd just tell stories. And he'd ask questions too, you know, and to get to know me and get to know our band better and stuff. And it was just those memories for me, and those experiences are priceless, because here's a guy, an absolute global icon and a legend, and he's having like one-on-one conversations with me. And
wow,
you know, he's sober, and I'm sitting there with a red Solo cup filled with Jack Daniels and water, and he knows it, but it doesn't, you know. He's not preaching about the ills of doing what I was doing. He just wanted to tell stories and hear stories. And just such a great teacher and human being. I mean, just he really showed me, and I'm pretty sure I already knew this, but he kind of cemented it to me that no matter how big of a public figure you may be in any vocation, you don't need to be a dick.
Right.
There's no cause for it. You know, he showed the great character trait of humility to me. And that's something that will never get lost out of me, or any of us, I think, for that matter. And just watching how he always handled himself and how kind he was to all the people around him. I never saw him be a dick to anybody. And that says a lot. We spent 7 months with those guys.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's a lot of time. And it was one of the great, great experiences of my life. It had such a huge impact on me. And I'll be forever indebted to all of them for that.
Cool. 19 years has passed since the release of Subhuman Race. And, you know, in a way, it wasn't maybe a massive commercial success at the time, but I hear so many people refer to it as an underrated gem nowadays, and I was just wondering how you look back on that record.
It was a really trying time, but I'm able to somewhat remove myself from that aspect of it and listen to the record, and it's a pretty cool record. Some stuff still seems a little unfinished, but for the most part, by and large, I really do like it. I thought that there was a lot of things on there that were so different for us, and that we took chances with, and I knew it was the Kiss of Death when Rolling Stone gave it a great review.
right.
It was comparing it to, you know, like the Soundgarden records and things like that. I knew once that happened, it was the Kiss of Death. But it was a great compliment, but I just knew that it was done. It was a really hard record to make. There was so much tension and turmoil and dissension, and it was argumentative, and it was just really, really difficult. And it was not a great experience by any stretch of the imagination. And so I think if you ask everybody individually and look back on it, that would play a big part in the formation of a person's opinion on that time. You know, separating the two, taking a look and listening to the record on its own, it's pretty cool. But the shit that went into the creation of that record was just, it was heartbreaking.
Right.
To be quite honest.
Right. And, you know, before you guys got back together with Johnny, I guess, what was that, like 2002, 2003? What were you up to musically?
We were doing a whole bunch of different stuff. Rachel Scotty and I had like this side band called Ozone Monday that was more of a not a pop oriented thing, but much more mainstream than you know, the direction that we were going with Skid Row. And Rachel was also producing other bands. He was had Prunella Scales, which was his another band he had on the side. And I had built a studio in my house, so I had bands and artists coming down there to do records and stuff like that. And I had done some stuff, some soundtrack work for a couple different movies. And basically just, it was all still music oriented. I guess there'd be no way around that, which is great.
Right.
It's just that, you know, at that time, Skid Row needed to be buried up to its neck for a little while.
Right on.
And not completely buried, just up to its neck. and then get resurrected a little bit.
Cool. Well, the new EP sounds great. Johnny's voice is sounding great. And you guys, like I said, you're just on fire. So I definitely recommend that all the Talking Metal listeners check out Rise of the Damnation Army, which is chapter 2 of United World Rebellion. Snake, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, man. I really appreciate the time. I really do. It means the world to us. And I'm glad that you like the EP, man. That means a lot to me as well. So I appreciate your support, and hopefully we'll see and talk to you soon.
That would be great. Are you still living in New Jersey?
I actually I live in Long Island now.
Oh, Long Island, okay.
Yeah, I lived in L.A. for 13 years, and about 2.5 years ago, I moved back to the East Coast, and I couldn't be happier.
Cool.
I saw your number, your area code, like, Jersey boy.
Yeah, North Jersey, yep.
Awesome.
Cool. Snake, thanks so much.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
All right, bud.
Bye.
To the monster, up to the
What you just heard was my interview with Snake from Skid Row, and that song right there was called Bonehead off of the Subhuman Race record, going back quite a bit at this point to the mid-90s.
Very, very cool.
Let's get into the interview with our main man from Trauma. He is the vocalist. His name is Don, and he was a good friend with Cliff Burton back in the day and played with Cliff Burton. If you guys haven't heard the reissue of Scratch and Scream by Trauma, it is great. And again, it includes three songs that Cliff played on prior to joining Metallica. Now, again, these are the bonus tracks that were on the 2013 re-release of the Scratch and Scream record by Trauma. Cliff was not on the original release back in 1984, but when they re-released it last year in 2013, they added these three bonus tracks, which we talk about in the interview. So let's do it. How about we get into a little classic Trauma right now with Cliff Burton on bass, and we'll follow that up with my interview with Don Hiller.
Perfect, Mark.
And this is what I'll say.
Hey guys, we have Donnie Hillier from Trauma on the line. Donnie, thanks so much for calling in to Talking Metal.
My pleasure, Mark. Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. I guess first off, let's check in with you on the new record that you guys announced a few months back. You're doing a brand new record. How's it going?
Right.
Is it recorded? Where are you in the whole process?
Yeah, it's completely recorded and mastered. And we signed a deal with Pure Steel Records from Germany. And we don't have a release date yet. The name of the album is Rapture and Wrath.
Nice.
And 10 songs. And we're really, really excited about getting that out and having people listen to new Trauma music after decades.
Absolutely. And the 10 songs you mentioned, are these all brand new songs that you've written in recent years, or is there some stuff that was left over from the old days that you have finally re-recorded or updated in some way?
Yes, nothing from the old days. I have a new writing partner, a new guitarist in the band, Kurt Fry. He's a veteran of stage and studio and veteran songwriter, and he and I wrote these 10 new songs, more than that actually, but all these songs were written in 2013, right up till we were recording late in 2013.
Cool. And that was actually one of my questions about Kurt. How did you actually meet up with him?
I've known Kurt for a long time. We played in a band after Trauma. We played in a band for a couple of years. And then our drummer, Chris Gustafson, who he and I go way back in, to the Trauma Scratch and Scream album, Chris played in a band with Kurt. And Kurt is pretty well known in the Bay Area metal scene. And so somebody that, you know, he's just been a friend for a long time.
Excellent, excellent. And what can we expect with the new record sound-wise? Is it a return to that sound you guys had during Scratch and Scream, or is it something more modern as far as, you know, hard rock and heavy metal go?
No, I'd say it's still the, you know, classic metal. It's different in that, you know, a lot of time has passed and you know, we have the same drummer, same vocalist, so that's similar. I would say that I use more range than I did in the Scratch and Scream days, a wider range, still the high notes, but that's kind of a different approach there. The songs, it's kind of an eclectic collection of songs. No two songs sound, you know, quite the same. It's not cookie cutter, that's for sure. But you know, it's all metal. It's all driving drums and screaming guitars, screaming vocals, and you know, thumping bass, as you can imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Now, when you mention your range, I mean, back in the day, it sounded like you had a really good range as far as the high notes went back then. So I'm assuming you're still able to hit all those notes. But when you say wider range, do you do more lower stuff now in addition to the high stuff?
Yeah, I wouldn't really call it lower, but let me take that back. I would call it lower. I wouldn't call it low. It's much, just a little more mid-range. You know, I'm just want to take a more dynamic approach.
Cool.
Back in the day, it was all about, well, if you can hit high notes, just hit them, you know.
Yeah.
And it was all about you know, doing that. And now it's a little more singing and. But yeah, I still have a higher voice than most, certainly than you know, the approach that a lot of people in metal take these days.
Excellent. When will I be able to hear this stuff?
I'm not sure. We don't have a release date yet. But I will definitely make sure that, you know, you get a preview of it. As you can imagine, the record company, you know, they want to, you know, manage the promo on that and or coordinate with our publicist, Scott Thomas, who you've interacted with.
Right, right.
So in the meantime, you know, we haven't gotten any kind of green light to let anybody hear it Very few people have heard it so far, and unfortunately, you know, we're excited to get it out there, but that's just the approach that, you know, a record label will take at this time.
Sure, I understand. Of course, I got to travel back in time with you and talk a little bit about the old days. We're very excited about the new stuff, but of course, we got to talk about the old stuff. Going back last year, the classic, an album that's almost taken on like a cult status through the years, the Scratch and Scream record was re-released, reissued. And one of the exciting things about the reissue is it included three additional songs that included your original bassist, Cliff Burton. I want to first talk about those three songs. The one song, Such a Shame, is that the same version that was on the Metal Blade Metal Massacre 2 record?
I think it is. It's funny that you're asking me the question because I've never thought of that. I think it is. I'm sure it is. I think we only did one set of sessions on that song. That was the first song we ever recorded. That was, I think, the first time probably any of us were in a recording studio, a real recording studio.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure, Mark, but I've never even thought about that there may have been some alternate versions of it.
And then there's two other songs, Woman Be Gone and We're Going Off. Were those
right.
two songs recorded at the same time as Such a Shame, or was that a different session?
Different sessions. Woman Be Gone, we had a manager back in the early 80s, and he was kind of a notorious guy. One of the things he did was he built his own recording studio, and we recorded one of many versions, different versions of Woman Be Gone, because he saw that as kind of, you know, this power ballad hit kind of thing. That was what he thought of it, and so we recorded I don't even know how many sessions of that, and so those were usually done, I think, in his studio. It was called Skid Row Studios in Concord, California, and I'm sure we did versions elsewhere. I know we did videos of it elsewhere. But and then We're Going Off, I think we recorded that in a studio down in L.A., and that's kind of a jam song. And the interesting thing about those three cuts is, those were really early days, and like I pointed out in the liner notes of the reissue of Scratch and Scream, you know, our sound was really changing a lot.
Right.
And because those were really, really early days of heavy metal.
Yeah, totally. And the one thing that I found fascinating, and I'm sure maybe other people have picked up on this, at least I assume they have, in We're Going Off, now that whole bass jam solo with the drums going behind it in the middle is very similar to what Cliff went on to do with Metallica on a song called Anesthesia Pulling Teeth.
That's exactly right.
Is that something a lot of people are picking up on?
Yes, yeah. I mean, not everybody whom I've talked to, but a few other people. But yeah, that's a very good observation, Mark, and you're dead right about that.
So that's something that Cliff was basically doing with you guys, and then later it became this, you know, world famous, almost iconic metal song with Metallica.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he got out the wah pedal and the red hair was flying, and yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very cool. And
it was very cool.
Was, like, when you guys, I don't know if you were involved in the legal ends of getting these three songs released on the reissue, but is this something you had to approach, like, Cliff's family about, or was there anything like that had to go on in order for you to release them? Maybe even approach Metallica? I doubt you'd have to approach them, but you never know.
Not Metallica, but definitely Cliff's dad, Ray Burton. He remembers us well and gave it his blessing. And yes, we did. We did want his blessing. We didn't want to do anything without it. Shrapnel Records and another member of the band were the ones that coordinated that with Cliff's dad.
Okay, cool. I don't want to make the whole interview about Cliff, but a couple more quick questions. When Cliff left Trauma, before you recorded Scratch and Scream, was it a friendly parting, or were you guys, I mean, I've been in bands, and a lot of times when the bands break up or somebody leaves, you know, you're suddenly not friends anymore and there's hard feelings. Was there any of that with Cliff leaving you guys?
No, there wasn't. As a matter of fact, especially a couple of us, we really, you know, liked Cliff a lot. We were pretty close to him. And actually, Mike Overton, the original, one of the original guitarists of the band, and I, we were at Cliff's first gig with Metallica.
Oh, wow.
We remained friends. We're backstage with him. The last time we saw him was backstage at the Cow Palace when they opened up for Ozzy, and we remained friends. There, before he left for his last tour, before he died, Trauma and Metallica had rehearsal rooms side by side for about a week or so before they left for that tour, and you know where they. We went out for drinks with Cliff and the three of us, and we remained friends and didn't want to see him go, but we respected his decision. When he left the band, it was kind of an emotional meeting, and he said it had taken a year for him to, you know, want to go in that direction, and you know, so, I mean, yeah, Cliff was just such a straight shooting guy and just a sincere guy and somebody we really cared for. So the friendship remained. Mike and I were at Cliff's funeral, and yeah, I just have great memories of him and great thoughts about who he was.
And did he leave the band? Was it a musical thing? Was he kind of looking to go in a slightly different direction?
I think so, yeah. I don't know that he gave us a lot of reason for it, but I think he thought he would be, you know, a little more featured and step out a little bit more musically.
Ah, okay.
You know, we had the two guitar thing going and so there wasn't a lot of talk about that, but I think that had something to do with it.
And kind of to jump out of history there into the present, you had two guitars going back in the day, but now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys are just a one guitar band, right?
Yeah, there's one right now. Kurt Fry is an exceptional guitarist, and we were going to have two guitars. We've gone through some changes with this lineup already. Some people that could have potentially been in the band, it didn't work out. There's a possibility of us maybe having two guitars at some point, but right now it's been kind of fun just, you know, going at it with the power trio with me out front.
Right, excellent. Cool. And then back in the day, Cliff leaves to go find success with Metallica, and you guys had some exciting stuff happen to you. You got some new members, and by 1984, you had hooked up with the real influential label Shrapnel, run by Mike Varney, and you released this record, which, again, over time has just kind of become a cult classic, and it was called, again, Scratch and Scream, as we've mentioned earlier. Any memories of how you actually ended up hooking up with Mike Varney and the Shrapnel label?
I guess, you know, I'm not sure when exactly I met Mike, but I think, it, you know, the scene was pretty active then. I mean, we're talking Metallica, Exodus, Vicious Rumors, Trauma, you know, bands playing regularly around San Francisco. And Mike, as you say, Mike is very well known, and he was writing an article for Guitar Player magazine, and you know, he's already been associated with Yngwie Malmsteen, and so I guess at some point he was seeing us, you know, playing on the circuit, and it's funny you ask, because I don't really remember how that started.
Huh. Okay.
And I do remember him, you know, being at gigs and you know, previewing you know, our repertoire before we went into the studio at rehearsal.
Interesting. So earlier in the interview, you mentioned that you had done some stuff musically post-Trauma, and you know, before you guys got back together in recent times. What are some of the? Can you review again? What are some of the projects and bands you were in the 2 to 3 decades between Trauma Records?
For me, I was in and out of music. I played with Kurt Frey in a band called Heist. I did some just projects that really never got off the ground. And then I did 3 albums with a Bay Area band called Black Sunday Dream. And as far as some of the other guys, Kurt he toured the U.S. with Heist. He did an album for CBS, I think, and toured with Heist. That's kind of, they were, kind of a hard rock band. And then Chris Gustafson, the drummer, Chris really did a lot of travels. Chris did 4 U.S. tours with a band called St. Elmo's Fire. He went to Switzerland and played in a band with Mark Kohler from Crocus called Threat. And then Chris and Kurt were together in a band called Mechanism. And all their ventures, they did, you know, some albums together and did a lot of opening shows for some really heavyweight acts, you know, like, you know, Van Halen and Bon Jovi and Night Ranger, and you know, just they did a lot of pretty good shows. Chris also played with Frank Cannon in a band called Moondog Maine, and so everybody's been pretty active. We're leaving for Germany in a week and a half for our first European couple of dates in Germany, and we have a stand-in bass player. His name is Steve Ribello, and Steve goes back with Kurt and did some tours with him, U.S. tours, and then Steve did a couple of European tours in a band called Dublin Death Patrol, and with Steve Zetro Souza and Chuck Billy from Testament.
Yeah,
and so Steve is really good friends going back a ways, and he is going to be playing bass with us, although he is a guitarist as well,
right.
Because our present bass player has passport problems.
Oh, okay. All right, very good. Well, that's exciting. Will this be your first batch of live shows, or have you guys been gigging already?
We have done a little bit of gigging. We've done 3 Bay Area shows with a local promoter, and then we've been to Sparks, Nevada, and then to Reno, Nevada, a couple of weeks ago, and we're actually talking with a promoter in New York City about potentially coming to New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And he was suggesting November. That's just at the very preliminary stages of talking. But we've been, you know, pretty busy getting the lineup set and writing songs and recording. And we really want to, you know, focus on playing live now.
Great. Well, I'm in New Jersey, right outside of New York City. So if you make a trip out here, definitely let me know.
Yeah,
I want to be there.
You're in Jersey City, New Jersey, right?
My partner John, who I do the show with, he's in Jersey City. I'm just a few towns over in a town called Maplewood, About 17 miles outside of New York City. So
yeah,
cool. Well, it's been great.
We'd be pretty excited about coming to that area.
Yeah, it'd be great to have you.
I think when we get home from Germany in August, we're going to start rehearsing new songs that Kurt and I have been working on. We want to follow this album up quickly with another album in 2014, make up for some lost time.
Excellent. And I guess before I let you go, just one final question. Going back to the 80s, you know, you guys released Scratch and Scream on Shrapnel, a pretty prominent label back then, and then you broke up not too long after that. What happened back then? Why did you guys call it a day?
Yeah. Well, we didn't have management at the time, and I think that, you know, that's not the key reason, but I think that could have held things together a little bit better. Chris, our drummer, moved to L.A. With his wife, who was going to school there, and the intention was, you know, that he'd be home often and we would, you know, continue, but time and distance had a factor there. And we started, our bass player, who was on Scratch and Scream album, Lucas, kind of became hard to locate. I don't know how else to say it, but so we started having kind of a revolving door of bass players and drummers, and you know, I wanted Luke and Chris to be playing those positions, and so things just kind of disbanded. Members moved in, out in different directions, physically, you know, some of them moved out of the area, and it became hard to maintain. We didn't have the internet in those days. Didn't realize that some people were, you know, reviewing the album really well. And we just had a terrible non-existent PR machine, I should say.
Right.
We just weren't very savvy about all that, and so regretfully, just like I said, didn't have the organization to keep things going.
And when did you guys actually call it a day back in the 80s? Was it like 85, 86?
Yeah, I think it was 85. It might have been early 86, but yeah, it you know, in retrospect, it wasn't that long after Scratch and Scream came out.
And it was actually before Cliff passed on, too.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay. Was just curious if maybe he got wind that you guys had called it a day and if he had any thoughts on it. But
yeah, I don't think so. I think we were still active. Yeah, I'm very sure we were still active when Cliff passed away.
Right. Donnie, it's been great talking with you. I love hearing the old stories, and I'm very excited for the new music. So please keep me posted on that. And we're going to get this interview up in the next week, probably maybe even this Tuesday. I'm not sure. If not this Tuesday, the following Tuesday.
Take your time, Mark. I know that you said some of your interviews are backing up, and thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope that I meet you face-to-face soon.
Well,
you know, I know you and your partner have done some great work. You've interviewed some terrific people, so I appreciate all that. And again, thanks for your time.
Oh, you bet, man. And let's hopefully hang out, grab a beer when you come do a show in the New York, New Jersey area.
Please, yeah.
All right, Donnie, take care.
You too, Mark.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
Yeah, you too.
What you just heard was the title track off the 1984 Trauma release, Scratch and Scream. I'm here in Maplewood with John Astronomy. Thanks for making the trip out, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
It's almost time for steaks. Emily's got them on the grill.
Yeah, I can smell them. They're great.
Yeah, cool. And yeah, it's been great to have John out here hanging with my kids. And we checked out Maple Woodstock, which is a little music festival that happens every year here in town.
Yeah, Norah Jones is playing tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
And not heavy metal, but a great artist.
That's true. And that's about it. I guess we're done. Help support the show. Go visit our site. Go leave us a review on iTunes, and what else? You can use the Amazon link in today's show notes to open up your Amazon and make your purchase. I think most of you guys know how that works. And visit TalkingMetal.com, visit TalkingMetalDigital.com, check out our other podcasts that are part of the Talking Metal Digital family. And that's that. So take care, guys, and we'll check you out.
Thank you, guys.
We'll check you out next time.